This is Nancy Qualls Corbett, April 11th, 1992, The Matter with the Fremenin, tape 2.
And it was dancing. My covetedness was a partner, and my humiliation was impatience in realizing that there's a time of waiting now for me. And it was a happy place.
I came across in the desert, and it was more, I came out, it was just a few years going down and down, and going towards the sunset. And then when you said nourish, I was going, oh, well, I was being nourished by the sunset, the beauty of the sunset. Then you said food, and I got concerned that maybe I should be eating something. No, it felt really good to be being nourished by this beauty, just the sunset, and just taking that in. And then the place where I went, and she was still with me, this young girl, and we're just there taking it in, and then we go down the cliffs into a really beautiful little cabin, and we're in there, and I was really happy to be there, and then what needs to be discarded. I got real concerned about that, and obviously there was stuff eaten that, you know, needed to be cleared up afterwards, and stuff, the garbage from that. And then what needed to be cleaned, and the toilet. Toilet needs to be cleaned. So I went in there, and we were cleaning that really well. I was concerned about it needing to be really cleaned well. And then, what was some of the others? Remind me.
What was the final humiliation, or what was
going on? When we went outside the celebration, you know, you're talking about, oh, it's outside, and there's a big field, and there was all these people I knew from my life all there. And some I didn't like being there. And the final humiliation was I was just one of them. Just another, you know, just one of them and not special. And even beyond that, a little mediocre compared to the rest. I didn't like that at all. It really made me mad. And everybody started laughing. Ha ha. It's great, isn't it? No. And I was having a real hard time, still do have a hard time laughing. But I started writing a lot and beginning to laugh. And the little girl was laughing too much. I didn't say anything, but I thought she was laughing a little too
much. As you're being just a so-so-a.
And then finally just, okay, all right, I can do that. Even with you, looked across the... There was this person, even with you, a laugh, you know, but not you. And yet. That's
Pardon?
I saw that, especially at the front of the one that is actually in the cottage. And I saw the dancing and people getting together and dancing outside. And I saw myself laughing, but it just, the whole imagery was just made me really sad. And that was just about to cry as I was watching myself celebrating. So I think, I don't know, it's just what maybe this dawning is, but I think.
Did Mother come with you?
No, I left her in the car.
Okay. Snuck out. Good. So it was there was a kind of a dual feeling of feeling sad yourself at seeing another aspect that could laugh and dance. You have trouble throwing out things. Cleaning out, throwing out, needs to be discarded. Things that needed to go. No, no trouble there. You. Didn't want to throw away anything.
Well, it's not taking my place. I didn't want to
last night when you did your thing, one of the things you were talking about, it's so much calm with me, except I didn't run away to Greece. I ran away to Orcas Island. And I did let people know I was going, but I didn't tell them where I was going. I told them I was only going to go for 3 days. And then I ended up staying a week. When I ran out of money, I just started using my plastic card. And I just had a wonderful, wonderful experience. So my trip in the tower this time is, or has been, self-imposed. Been a real, I mean, it's been an 18-month real inward type thing for me, and I'm only recently starting to step back out of it. I'm more than willing to go back in if it's necessary.
Pardon?
Although when you said what needs to be cleaned, cleaning the toilet came to mind, it doesn't fit too well for a plant, you know. But there was that sense of it wasn't stealing to take in earth and water and sunlight and air. Mm-hmm. It didn't feel like that was something that was stolen. It was simply there and in the nature of the plant to use what was available without feeling any sense of wrongness.
Yeah.
Or shame. And so that was happening. And then the humiliation, what had to go and those kinds of things, there was some sense for a moment or two of threat, like what if an animal comes and eats the plant that's over, you know. And then that passed. And then about humiliation, I had this image, birds would fly by and shit on it, you know. And then you went very quickly into the laughter, and there was this beautiful flower that from after the birds,
which is, like a zinnia, just purple. Plus, and what is it called? Past action photography or something?
And it just blew, you know. And that was where it stayed, you know. So it wasn't a journey anywhere. It was a journey in one place, a whole cycle of emergence out of the darkness and the growth and blooming. And then, you know, sitting here listening to the circle, just letting my mind go with the rest of that, then comes the death of the plant, but the seeds are there. So it's part of the return.
Well, they're really kind of follow our individuation process. We can talk about how the shit, or the actual shadow component, is that really necessary thing to get at that fertilizes our blooming, our coming forth, you see. It's the same in the alchemical terms of the negredo, which is that the prima materia from which the lapis can be processed. So, yeah, you just kind of bloom where you are. It's that kind of feeling coming out. Leaving the princess behind? Okay, you want to talk about leaving the princess behind? Let's do that. What does it mean to leave the princess behind?
There would no longer be any certain expectations for the meaning of the thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. An analogon whose dream that I will read at the or tell you at the end of this particular session. In the beginning of analysis, and she wrote a poem. I don't have the poem with me, but it was called Princess No Face. And she was in the poem. It told about something about the queen in her white gloves, and meaning her mother, because it's quite a southern, really the prototype of what you would think of this southern woman as being. And the king, the father king, was counting his money, and she was Princess No Face, and what it had, she had to, and really she had a dream shortly afterwards in which she looked in a mirror and there wasn't a face. So the sense of her own identity was nothing but just wrapped up in this kind of made-up princess image that she was supposed to be. One of her memories is being 5 or 6 years old and playing in a neighbor's treehouse, and the father coming and getting her down and warning her that she must never do that because she would fall, so she couldn't play with the neighbor children. I think she could roller skate, but she could not ride a bike until she was 12 years old. She never learned to drive a car until after she was married. You know, she was a very, very protective thing. So she had, I mean, even though this is an extreme and unusual, it is the sense of where our identity goes. It's truly the sense of what our face would be and what our identity is. Now, couple that with the little princess attitude of what you're talking about, which is the sense of the maiden, or the one that has to be catered to, or the one who is the privileged one, or but that she has no real deep sense of herself, only that she belongs to the king and queen, you see. Can we help her?
No.
Then, how do, and of course when the little, what we want, when we're looking at the sense of the feminine in the fairy tales, we know that the king is kind of the dominant conscious attitude. And we usually, and we look at the queen in fairy tales and in dreams, say, of the dominant feminine. But if we're always a princess, you see, then the real dominant aspect of the feminine never reaches our conscious life. And he always stays in kind of an infantile or girlish way. That the sense of the relational never truly develops. The true sense of compassion or caring can never be, in that sense, well-grounded. Truly the sense of intimacy can never develop because we don't even know who we are. It takes for intimacy to develop. You have to have a sense of your own identity. So when we talk about the willingness to give up the image of the princess or the little princess, and usually that belongs to father's little girl, not necessarily though, it's only then that we can develop into the sense of our own womanhood. The princess. Well, what are your associations with the princess? How do you view her?
I think in my, you know, there was my childhood, I wasn't allowed to see the children, most of the children. There was a lot of time, and so I actually so there are times that I didn't have hardly any friends, and I was always alone, and yeah, I was always dressed beautifully. There was always a fence, you know, around. And I, most of my life, I said, yes, I was a very special person. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I was brought up as a princess. You know, mm-hmm. But there wasn't anything about the father, you know, that was the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it takes a long time to really shed that kind of image, concept of yourself, you know, from what you're not supposed to be, you're not supposed to be there, you're not supposed to be.
I had a dream that I'm very grateful for now, but I just hated it. It's something, and I just felt part of it. And my glass slippers shattered.
That what?
My glass slippers shattered.
Oh my goodness!
And I had to sweep them up in the garbage and walk home at night alone. And I'm very grateful for that dream today. It went.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the prince.
That is, yeah. Waiting for the Prince Charming, absolutely.
It reminds me of a story of a friend of mine who was a very beautiful and sensuous woman and would attract lots of men. And she was at the house of a man, another Texas story, but she was at the house of a man and was surprised that he wanted to sleep with her. So she was going to dinner or something like that, and ended up leaving without her shoes and walking across railroad tracks and walked for several miles to get home in the night with no shoes. Just remind me of them. And there's a sort of happy ending, well, there is a happy ending, because she eventually married a man whom she ordinarily would not have thought of as attractive. And the marriage has worked out wonderfully. So she rescued herself from that really confused princess.
Mm-hmm.
The princess of beauty rather than the princess of royal privilege. Which I think this culture makes you into a kind of princess.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Set you apart in some way.
And traps mm-hmm. you just as much as
exactly.
that.
Yeah.
Which men are not very understanding of either. They don't see that beautiful women suffer.
Actually, I'm literally a beautiful woman. And one night we had an argument. I chose to sleep downstairs just because it was getting too hot. I couldn't separate myself. So I just better. And about 2:30 in the morning, she came bursting into the room, just weeping. And after about half an hour of weeping, she told me about this dream, seeing her daughter. In the room, and then the daughter turning, and the child has no face. I didn't understand the dream. And it just really strikes home now. This was a long time ago. And I'm like, I didn't understand it. Yeah, you know, just that lack of identity. And I remember that whole time we were together, she was really struggling. She had three different careers, you know, in a space of about a year and a half. Mm-hmm. Really come to terms with some kind of I am this. You know? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For sure, yeah. I think I'm sure she is coming to terms. She's very proud woman she'll make. And, yeah, and that I didn't understand that. Didn't know. I didn't have any idea what that meant. That's really beautiful. Now I know.
Yeah.
And I intuitively, I didn't give it too much thought at the time. I was just kind of shocked. Wow, it's a very strange image. But now it's obvious.
Putting on makeup and putting a face on it. And I wonder if the word that's you probably has the same root. Facing the hard and easy aspects of facing. And I know in studying Aikido, it's been profoundly revealing to me the idea that that to be safe, your safety comes from facing your opponent, your attacker, and really facing them, and really staying there with them. And so you, and one of the tests, you know, the instructors would always be saying, so if we're having a struggle, then this far off, and that's no good. And you have to be, so the facing, you know,
facing the, uh-huh.
Wow. It's essential.
One of the things that I thought of, and just the tension between feeling like I should be grateful for the Father's protection at the same time as it was suffocating, and that it was somehow not okay to reject it and to push it away, and that whole struggle with to survive, needing to do it. And you said the princess, I have the feeling that reading the reality, the stories that Princess and the Pauper, that there was a play put on in Lincoln last year. I think it was a story of Mary Travers or something, I can't remember. But this young woman who had been raised as if she were a porcelain doll, and her father's home, and one of her lessons was to be able to walk across the carpet without leaving a mark. And she struggled so that there would be no sign that she had been there. And this just, I just felt like it was a knife going right through. That somehow that was supposed to be a good goal. And that becoming aware that it's not, it's costly, but it's also priceless. It was just a bit anxious. I mean, I still see the image inside.
Mm-hmm.
But there is that tension growing up of the dance doing it for you.
Right.
To reject it is to kill it. And then to carry the, quite literally, the clothes will put your father in his grave. Where you put me in the grave. Well, there's a choice. Some of you have to go.
That's a very big topic that I would love to hear people say something about, between men and women about protection. It's been a traditional role of men to protect women, and it seems like what you're describing is hard, not protecting but ownership, and smothering. So what happens now for men and women when the role of the protector is...
It's the jailer.
Well, it's a jailer, and also it's obsolete because, women don't really, the modern woman hardly needs to be protected by a man anymore, and the sensitive man isn't much good at protecting himself, you know. No, but neither can men. I mean, it's more than women, but still not.
I realize it's the danger to come in to this life also.
But now, this is a big topic. I just want to say, it seems to me that women are now called upon to become warriors too. I don't like that. And so what does that do between men and women? If women now have to protect themselves.
Maybe it enables the man to reconsent.
We have to become a warrior too before we can deal with the feminine. Because otherwise we just get an ill feminine that will be mocked by the confused masculine at some point.
Maybe it's a chance for men to turn to men and find out why men rape. I once worked on the hotline of the rape hotline, and I had all these thoughts of hoping, and then it occurred to me that women don't have to go find out why men rape. It's for brothers to go help one another and find out what's going on.
Men don't rape. They man. Men don't rape. And I think this is part of my husband. Yep. This is a real hot issue that a lot of people.
Yep.
Now, so it's like I think the women's movement has learned a lot about labels and cliche and generalization. Let's not abandon that. Address issues that we need to address.
Of her vulnerability to be taken care of by you, and you can allow a certain amount of your vulnerability to be taken care of by her, so that an equality of protection can take place. Because there's certainly places in men that need protection. You know? So it's kind of like, we can't generalize. Like you said, men don't rape. So what if you can generalize about that? I think it has to be a really specific thing with a specific person.
I also think there's a difference between real protection and the guise of protection.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you're saying what is protection for, maybe protecting her from his own fears
of losing her. And that's not protection. So I think it has to be, the word has to really maybe be looked at in the context, and I think that's maybe the word that's used, but it really is meaning something else when it's suffocating. And I think you're right. I think that there's a complementarity and protection that men and women can offer each other in a very loving way that's part of a bond that can form between men and women, either in partnership or in whatever kinds of relationships, work relationships, too. And it is a way of revealing the vulnerability and trusting that it will be respected. Respect is a form of protection. So it's a very, I think it's a real complex concept. We need to explore it. Think more about it.
You see, I think that we have to look at it in two different realms. When we're talking about protection, and we generally assuming we're talking about physical protection, and that is necessary. I mean, and certainly, as anybody, the strong protect the weak, whether it's women or children or old people or whatever. And we kind of assume that is part of what we're about. But when we're talking about psychological protection, you see, as if I don't want you to be exposed to that because that may make you change, then we're getting into a completely different realm. Or I don't want you to be exposed to this new attitude because then you might not like me anymore or something. You see, so, I mean, that's getting into some real other, a different area. Now, what I think when we're talking about little princesses, we're talking about that the mind has, or that different attitudes. I don't trust you to assume, to know what's best for you. See? To know. I don't trust your value. I don't trust you to have any other values but mine. So we're getting into a completely different area, I think, when I'm talking about little princesses. Don't grow up, it says. Don't mature. Don't explore. Don't experiment. Who was it that I wish somebody, you know, one of the candidates said, yeah, I had to smoke pot. I had to have an affair just because I had to try. Those kind of things. So that we don't live in such a narrow, teeny little psychic world or tower in that sense, you see. Or that whatever my spiritual beliefs are not restricted to because that's what my father or my culture or my whatever happened to decree. That's where we end up being little princesses. Very protected because our ego may not be strong enough to assume the dark side. So in that sense, you see, we're sleeping beauties, that kind of little princess. We just simply go to sleep when we're 16 years old, right at the time in which we're reaching womanhood. And then the myth goes that we wait for a prince to wake us up. Let's see. Now, most women will take that literally and say, and for the men, you see, if you're looking at it just the opposite side, most women will take that literally and say it, oh, the man of my dreams has come and he's taken me away from my father's house or from my whatever, you see. And my life is going to be forever, ever perfect. She's still a little princess. This woman that I wrote about that said, that wrote about Princess No Face had the realization, you see, that it's not the external man, but the internal man that comes and kisses her awake. The animus begins. He has to awaken her, literally awaken her. It means bring her into consciousness of what she really is. And this woman had a very conscious realization, I mean, just wham, back, black and white kind of thing. It was that she was at a very fine resort with her husband and several other couples. And they were all having a dinner together, and she and her husband arrived a little late. The others were seated, and they were standing kind of in the vestibule looking into the dining room to see where their table was. And all at once, she saw all these wives at the table. And they were so charming and so darling and so precious. And they were laughing at the men. And they were having this delightful repartee, you see. And it just, at that moment, the inner animus kissed her awake. And she saw what it was, and she called them princess wives. And they were. And she said, I am too. I'm a princess wife. So that's, you know, but at least she had that kind of awakening. And it's not the external man who comes to marry the princess because you stay the princess, but the inner animus who begins to awaken or bring in that sense of spirit that really defines what the woman is for the woman. You see, and that's when we were talking about the man my dream man with the cut-off arms of how we've got to make him help us shape this part of ours to define what our feminine really is, our receptacle. Those elements he brings those in, you see. So that's how our princess awakens. Then she can really enter into what we've written about is the sacred marriage. And the marriage, the sacred marriage, becomes the sense of the own contrasexual side, you see. And our unconscious, our conscious, both joining in together. And that's the whole. And from that whole, then the divine child is born, you see, from that union. So it doesn't help if we look for the external answer. It must come within. Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Before we leave this, let me read this woman's dream. It was her dream. It's the same woman that I'm talking about, started off with Princess No Face. This is her dream. It's her dream, but I really think that it has to do with the collective feminine dream. She entitled this dream, Women on a Journey. Several women and I take a journey. The only map we have to follow shows no elevation. In fact, no details of any sort. Concerned, I point to a certain area on the map and say, this map doesn't show the hill, the big one we must cross. And then we continue on our way. We must crawl because we must clean the landscape as we go along. One woman becomes particularly fatigued, and I try and help her. In the distance, we glimpse the hill I was speaking of, and now realize it is so large that it must be called a mountain. We move on, and one woman abandons her knapsack, and we rest in a house that is infested under the linoleum with millions of cockroaches. We move on and stop for a little while in a dried-up riverbed. Finally, we make it and arrive at a place where there are two celebrations going on. One is a Christmas celebration, and one is a wedding celebration. This is the woman that was Princess No Face. This is one dream. Yeah. It's the woman, it's the journey of the feminine. And so when we talk about the matter of the feminine, and I want you to see how the image of this dream kind of pulls in that sense of what does really matter, what really does matter, and the dream, bring it in the sense that we don't even know what our destination is from the dream, only that we must go, you see, on this journey. And we don't even know where we're going, nor why we're going, you see. But there is that sense of the women going on the journey. The map, there's really no map that brings in the details. And what we thought was a simply a little hill is a mountain. And it is treacherous. It's not very pleasant, actually. It's the sense of there really not being a safe shelter at places, you see. And at times it truly does feel like the water of life or the river of life has dried up. I liked it, particularly the part where you have to clean up the landscape. You crawl, you see. Bring it into your contact with earth and to clean it up. But there are places in which we can let go of burdens, and there's places in which we do assist each other when the real fatigue sets in and began to be that feeling of support, loving support, I think, you see. And then we do arrive at the place, sort of like our fairy tale that we talked about, the place of celebration. Of course, the wedding celebration here is the sacred marriage. It is the union of opposites, the masculine and the feminine, the rational, the irrational, consciousness and unconsciousness. It's this bringing together those opposites. And the Christmas celebration, of course, is the birth of the new sun. It's the birth of the divine child, our inner life, our new life, the sense of self, that aspect that is created, that we are created in touch with that which is divine, and bringing us into a true celebration with these separate aspects, you see. There's no question that this journey is all of ours. We have to participate in it if we choose to do the celebration. We don't have to participate in it, but I think because we're here, we are participating in it, you see. So I did want to tell you about this one, her desert crossing, as it would be, and her sense of journey and how it came in the dream. Not that she hasn't lived it out a great deal in her everyday life, too. So, now while we have some time left, do you want to pull your... You want to look at yourself. You want to see what it is that you have created. And to feel, yeah. Are you surprised? Do you like your what?
On this side, two of tape two, is a series of questions with a guided imagery Nancy has put together synthesizing two of Grimm's tales, Maid Maleen and King Freshbeard. I recommend you pause the tape after each question and allow images to develop write, or simply hold them. Image yourself from the tower. What does the tower look like? What is the tower's name? Who put you in this tower? What put you in this tower? Or how did you come to find yourself sealed in this tower? Who is the companion with you in this tower? How will you know when it's time to come out? Do you want to come out? Which tool or device enables you to begin your move out of the tower? What do you see when you get out? Look. See what's here. In relationship to what you see, what do you feel? That is the end of the first guided imagery around the tower. The second guided imagery is the occurrence of what happens outside the tower. What do you find to nourish you? How do you gather this nourishment to you? You and your companion arrive at a new place. What does it look like? What is the name of this place? How are you received in this new place? How do you image yourself? What are your cleaning chores here? What needs discarding, casting out, scrubbing down? What do you take, steal, or covet? Image yourself joining the dance of life. How is it that you dance? What is the music you hear? What is your final humiliation? Image yourself laughing with yourself. Accept and know your new place. This is the end of the guided imagery based on The Matter of the Feminine by Nancy Qualls Corbett, April 11, 1992.
This is lovely. Would you like to read this? You found it. I think that.
Where I bought the clay, the woman at the art store said, take one of these. And there's a workshop coming up called Realizing the Image, workshop for women. The opening quote, we begin life with the world presenting itself to us as it is. Someone, our parents, teachers, analysts, hypnotizes us to, quote, see the world and construe it in the, quote, right way. These others label the world, attach names, and give voices to the beings and events in it, so that thereafter we cannot read the world in any other language or hear it saying other things to us. The task is to break the hypnotic spell so that we become undeaf, unblind, and multilingual, thereby letting the world speak to us in new voices and write all its possible meanings in the new book of our existence.
Where is it?
It's May 29th, 30th, and 31st. Friday evening, 7 to 10, Saturday, Sunday, 9 to 5, Elizabeth Studio in Pioneer Square. And I'll leave this on the table if people can check it out. The presenters are Patricia Smith and Elizabeth Tapper. Yeah, one is a therapist who's gone back to study sculpture at the University of Washington, and the other is an artist and a printmaker who's going to be doing monotype printing as a means of expression. I don't know a lot about it.
No, come on.
I hesitate to say this, but it's almost kind of a caution to me that from a Jungian standpoint, I think we may have a tendency to overuse the concept of the feminine and the masculine, or the masculine and the feminine. I think that if we get careless with that, it's very easy to get lazy, because I think a lot of what we put in these categories is much more generalized in terms of just human, shared. A lot of it is shared. Apparently, genetically, some people are claiming there's only about a 3% difference. Not that that's not meaningful, but I think we fall into a scientific paradigm unintentionally. You know, I mean, things like warrior energy supposedly being a male, but it's not.
No.
Always been women warriors. Nobody owns that. And, you know, certain kinds of sensitivity that we think of as feminine. A lot of that moves around culturally. Of course, there is certain kinds of feminine that only belong.
Pardon.
I'm sorry. Was there a last part of the guided imagination that you intended to do, and you didn't? I don't know. I had some sense of that. And I don't know.
That just to guide you through the fairy, through the tale as we had done it, and just see what your own images are, and understand how you relate to this. To this symbolic material in a personal way.
So the dream, actually, the dream that you talked about, the last dream of the woman going through that, mm-hmm. corresponded to that last part that we did.
In a way, yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just her sense of her journey. Yeah. As her own journey. Well, we've talked about the sense of the vulnerable. Feminine and the vulnerable masculine, and the transformative factor of that. and where we've concentrated mostly with the feminine energy, and I certainly say, you know, if let's not get stuck in this kind of understanding that this is woman and man, but the masculine principle and the feminine principle. I just wanted to close with one of these favorite poems of mine by Wilkie, and it is called Leda. And it's about, if you know the mythology, that Zeus found Leda very, very wonderful, attractive woman, and wanted her very badly. And so, and he was very aggressive and turned himself into a swan in order to woo her or attack her or whatever swans do, you see. So that's what the myth that Wilkie wrote this about. And listen to the feminine energy and imagery in here. When the god, needing something, decided to become a swan, he was astounded about how lovely the bird was. He was dizzy as he disappeared into the swan. But his deceiving act soon pulled him into the doing, before he had a chance to test all the new feelings inside the being. And the woman, open to him, recognized the one soon to be in the swan. He capitalizes one soon to be. Read that. And the woman, open to him, recognize the one soon to be in the swan. And she knew what he asked for was something which, confused in her defending, she could no longer keep from him. He pressed closer, and pushing his neck through her less and less firm hand, let the god loose into the starling woman. Then, for the first time, he found his feathers marvelous, and lying in her soft place, he became the swan. So you have your clay images, you have your matter to take with you, you have your images to take with you. One thing that just dawned on me, little princesses don't know what to do with swans. but women really do, I think. And the whole understanding, the transformation that can come. So, dear ones, it's been lovely being with you.
It was a wonderful, it was like a ceremony we did at the end. We finally realized that there was, the only way we moved out of it is not being anything.
Right.
That we each have to do our own work, and we all move out.
Mm-hmm.
But we couldn't point to relationships and blame them when we moved out.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't the reason. And our roles were just as intense and powerful from whatever sense we were. We each had to do tremendous work to move forward.
I think this is a good start
to do while we're talking this time with our clay. Now, other time we begin to seal and begin to make the containers to shape that sense of our feminine being. This time we want to get more into the matter, into the sense of our own body. And what the paper bags are for, if you will try this. We're going to have to talk above the rattling. But put the clay in the paper bag. And your hands in there with it. And form your body. Form your body out of clay. Don't look at it. Oh, I was going to give you your sack back. don't look at what you're doing. Again, feel the clay. Let it begin to move your hands almost. And so that you can begin to see where your body, how the clay responds to you. And let it be, huh?
Your body has foot.
Has a foot?
Has
a toe? Of beginning, what do we want to say? In other words, not letting the conscious eye make the image of your body, but something other than that. So you can see what it is your body is. Everybody kind of understand what we're about? But you do, if you want to put a leg on or an arm on or a head on, you know, what feels right for you to do that? Of what feels right for you to, how you want to, in other words, describe your body in clay. Using your hands, but not your visual senses, other senses to take over. What wants to come?
Only one body.
Right, yeah. Okay, why don't you kind of get into that? Oh, gosh, I forgot about it. I was going to get a cup of coffee. Why don't you get into that and and then we'll start talking. We left the woman in the tower after she got on the ground and looked around. Some saw devastation, some saw their lushness. Take a few minutes and get back in the imagery, if you can, of where we left. Where your picture kind of finished off. and your companion realize you must start your journey. What direction do you go? Look around, what is there? What do you find to nourish you? How are you received in this new place? How do you image yourself? What will you do to sustain yourself in this new place? What are the cleaning chores that you must do? Cleaning chores. Where must you clean? What must you throw out? What needs to be discarded? What needs scrubbing down? That isn't yours, that you covet, you want for yourself. Image yourself joining in the dance of life. What music is playing? How are you dancing? What is your final humiliation? And image yourself laughing with yourself. Laughing with yourself. Laughing, wonderful sound. The acceptance. The acceptance of coming to your new place and knowing it is your new place. Now stay with your images. Feel them. Let the feelings surround you. Enter into your being. And when you're ready, only when it feels the right time for you, you come back to this room. Doing to your tape, if it's sounding like a... Tighter.
And then you said that in humiliation,
the next thing. And to be left with my friend and Violet and everyone else. And it really kind of worked. You know, we stayed in our house, but I wasn't staying out there. So, you
know. See that sign?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Could you laugh at all? Could you get through the?
I was laughing. When I was in my garden, I was singing. I was laughing. You know, tigers were purring, running down my leg, and I was playing cards. And that was great. As long as I didn't use the count. But I think the reason why I didn't hear things outside the house was because I had stolen the house and I had stolen the horse. Besides, really gone against culture and convention.
Very much involved in the humiliation and the accumulation just kind of really got me. Because what it happened to be is that I sent a manuscript and it was not accepted. You know, and I try to laugh about it. I mean, I'm laughing now, but I guess when I was seeing myself, you know, I couldn't actually laugh about it. So I guess the man didn't mind explaining the verse and just kind of looked at it. So what? And I was trying still, I guess, to come to terms with the manuscript. And that particular time was not accepted. Excuse me. The reason that this came up for me, I always go from whatever image comes up, is that this is the image came very quickly. And the reason this came up was something going on that had nothing to do with my poetry at all. Because I was just selected by Bambushu and poetry and translations work. But there was a book supposed to be published by someone. Because of all kinds of many different reasons, couldn't it be? And if it were not, and I guess that kind of broke my heart. So this is, you know, and that happened very recently. And this is why it came up. So I'm still struggling, you know, to come to terms with this. And with that particular publisher, it's not going to happen. Well, there was a publisher. This has just got me really wiggly. I guess my body must be alive or something.
I want to hold on to my music to go that far.
Absolutely.
I'm playing with this dragged clay here. It looks like space powder.
There's no food.
There is no food. And I thought, you asked what sustains me, and I thought, well, during a time of fasting, the sustaining is from the inside. And that was part of how I could get through the desert. And then I did see a very small tree with green leaves on it. And I could eat the leaves and get some moisture from those, but it was very, very sparse. And as I walked along, I came to, and I was alone, I came to a very lush green. It was just a very happy place. People were celebrating, and we were dancing. And the dancing was waltz and the ball and various different kind of place. And I felt all dusty because I had spent all this time in the desert. And I had this real full skirt on, but I got into the dance and I really enjoyed it. And really got into it and I started twirling. And as I spun around, my skirt went up and everyone could see that I had on no underwear. But then they could see that my pubic hair was gold. That's what I was laughing. Everybody was celebrating this, and this golden pudding hair that I had, and just laughing and celebrating.
That was a powerful image. A golden image, actually.
Golden image.
Oh, but the nourishment, you said, it was like came from within, like a kind of fasting. The dryness, the desolateness of the desert.
That's been very much my experience. Very much.
And that is the end of the tape. Copyright C.G. Jung Society, Seattle, and the speaker. All rights reserved. No copying, please.